Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Mite Bomb Beekeeping Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Rodriguez. This will be the first time I've ever recorded an episode using StreamYard on the laptop here, and I'll put this on the podcast and on the YouTube channel. Today is a day I'm going to get to do something I've wanted to do for a long time, which was speak to someone from South Africa who currently keeps bees in South Africa. Found him on TikTok, of all places, where I like to watch a lot of bee TikTok videos, and we ran into each other there, and I asked if he would come on and talk to me, and he was nice enough to accept that. So today I have Chris Kroger from, is it Cape Town, South Africa? Is that's where you're from?
That's correct, Bruce. Cape Town, right on the southern tip of Africa. Couldn't get further south unless you hit the ice.
Okay, there you go. So today, like what I've always wanted to do was find out if the things that I was told about beekeeping there are true or false. So we're gonna either find out if they were right or if they were just dead wrong and it's just a pipe dream. But first, if you could just tell me a little bit about what you do over there, maybe how long you've been messing with bees, just a little general information you can briefly tell us.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce, and thanks for inviting me on here. And it was a strange way to meet you on TikTok, but a good one as a result. Yeah, I first got involved with bees when I was 15. Just to give you an idea, I'm 57 now, so it was a fair while ago. Our next-door neighbor, the old fella, had 5 hives in his back garden up against the mountainside. And being an inquisitive teenager, I decided to try and get in there and get some honey out. And he caught me in the act, and instead of giving me a good flogging, which he should have done, he shoved the bee suit on me and invited me to work with bees with him, which I did for a number of years. Life then took me away from Cape Town as such, first up into Angola and then as a commercial diver all over the rest of the world. Only worked in the States once, and that was in North Carolina. Had a lot of fun there. But being away from home on a 3-month, 1-month home rotation meant that keeping bees wouldn't have worked out well for the bees. That said, it's always been a passion, and lying on particular dive vessels all over the world, I found YouTube and watched the likes of 681 Dirt Rooster and Mr. Ed. A lot of fun watching them, and look forward to all their postings. A couple of years ago, I started inquiring about purchasing a swarm here. What was it, about 4 years ago, I suppose? Found a fellow who sold me a dud swarm. Left after about a week. It was queenless. Met another old fellow, brilliant chap, Yanni Conradi, here in Cape Town, 77 years old, still fit and strong, climbs trees and cuts them down and takes out bee swarms up in the top of trees. And he gave me a lifetime's experience, a crash course in beekeeping in about 2 years. he's got over 60 years experience. And from there, did a lot of bee removals with him. And we've built our swarms up to, we've got about 30 hives up now, living in a residential area. Properties are all quartered to half acre, so I've got them dotted around at good friends' places. I try and keep 3 together at each apiary. Does make it running around a little bit from apiary to apiary, but it's all within a sort of a 10-mile radius. So, yeah, we've built them up, and this year will be our big honey harvest, I think.
Okay. So for my podcast, it's called the Mite Bomb Beekeeping Podcast, and you said something like because of that name, it seems like there's 2 very different ways of thinking about beekeeping here in the United States. And that's probably the biggest understatement of the century. Here there are definitely 2 very distinct ways of keeping bees. And here people kind of can go at each other's throats about it and get very insulting. You know, I'm guilty of it. And there's definitely 2 different ways of you know, there's the treatment side and the non-treating side. So over there where you're at, what's the difference between when you had bees when you were younger and since you've picked it up again, specifically, you know, talking about the mite, varroa mite situation?
Well, nobody really mentioned, none of the beekeepers that I spoke to, none of the retailers where you're going to buy equipment, whether it's a smoker or gloves or a brush, you always end up chatting bees and what location you're in. Nobody had mentioned varroa mites until TikTok and you came along. It's something that we hadn't heard of. And then did some research and found out that a varroa mite infestation hit the Western Cape here in 1997 in a place called Simonstown, which is about 6 miles from me as the crow flies. It's a naval base. They do ship repair there for privately owned vessels, company owned vessels, and I think it came in on one of the vessels. The Department of Agriculture did some research. There were no commercial treatments available in South Africa. And to bring a product in like that, the way I understand it, would have taken a couple of years to get it certified for use. So their take on it was, see what happens. And I understand that there were some colony losses in the Western Cape. It spread up into the rest of South Africa. But the bees have overcome it, as I'm sure they've overcome many infestations over the last million years or so under their own steam.
Right. Well, that's what I've heard. And over here, I've heard two totally different stories about South Africa beekeeping. Every time, sorry about that. Every time someone told me a story, it was some person from here who is just kind of regurgitating whatever suits their way of thinking. Oh man, that stinks. All right.
Don't worry. I like the sound.
So from one person, I would hear that there's no treating goes on over there. And you guys are pretty much just post-varroa mites, don't really worry about them. And then another person would tell me, no, it's a total myth. Everyone over there treats their bees just like over here. There's nothing different. And that's why I was so glad to finally run into you. So, man, what was I going to say there? So back when you were first keeping bees, when you were younger, did 100% of your colonies survive every year, or did some sometimes die of different things? How did you all explain why? I don't know how winters are over there, if you even have winter. I'm very geographically illiterate, but is there any point where colonies used to die in the past?
The winters here, the weather here, we have a very mild summer. Today was unusually hot, 30 degrees C, but we're in our spring now. You guys are going in your fall. We have wet winters. The temperatures rarely drop below 9 degrees centigrade or Celsius. We don't freeze in the Cape here. Snow is something we travel to Europe to go and see. The highlands in Lesotho, which is an very high mountains in an interior country that's surrounded by South Africa. They do get some snow, but it's hardly worth mentioning. So our wet winters, we'll have 5 or 6 days of good rain, and then we'll have sunshine for 7 or 8 days, and the bees are out foraging and feeding. As a youngster working with the old guy next door, we never had any colony losses. He never split his hives. He would let them swarm off, and he would say that's an investment for somebody else. What he did teach me, and I still practice today, is if I pull frames from a super of one hive and I spin them and I put that extruded comb back, it goes into the same hive. I don't swap it into another hive. And his logic was if there are any pests or mites or parasites, or any disease, you wouldn't transfer it into another box. And that's something I still try and practice today. It's quite complicated when you're putting 15 honey supers off 15 different hives to get the extruded combs back into the same hive. But yeah, just be methodical, and it works for me.
Yeah, I think here almost nobody does that. I know I don't do that. But if you can do it, I'm sure and it's working for you. So back then, they just allowed their colonies to just swarm and just let them hang and take off. Then he never boxed them up to make extra colonies or anything.
No, not at all.
And they just kind of never died, like just nothing ever died. I guess there's nothing really to kill them back then.
We don't have the cold weather.
Yeah.
Or the extreme weather. And the 4 or 5 years I've worked with him, we never had never lost a hive, never lost a swarm.
Wow, that's something. I always wondered that about here because, I don't know what beekeeping was like in the 50s here or the 40s or anything before that. I don't know.
Not that old.
No, I don't mean you, but I mean, I always wonder how it was here, decades ago. Apparently, very rarely a colony would die. I don't know. I mean, now it's pretty common to have a good number die, but now over there in the present time, you still have mites now. From reading the same paper that you sent to me from the agricultural research?
Department of Agriculture, yeah.
Yeah, that was really interesting. Do you have any colony losses at all now?
No colony losses at all. I did, last year I think I did about 40 removals. Some of the smaller colonies where we didn't manage to get the queen, they would dissipate and eventually move out. The colonies where we got the queens are doing well. My smaller colonies that I caught in our autumn, that I removed in our autumn, I fed through winter. I kept them at my home. And in fact, I opened two this evening that I've placed out on the site. And there's 10 full frames in the brood colony. I put honey supers on this afternoon. And they've done really well.
Wow, that's so shocking to hear that just no colonies die. We're kind of used to it here.
The only colonies I've lost was right in the beginning, sort of 4 years ago when I bought the guy who had removed them. So he wasn't splitting. He was selling the swarms that he removed. And they were the only colonies I lost. And I'm pretty sure, knowing what I know now, and I'm no expert. I don't claim to be an expert. I mean, I'm pretty new to the bee game as such. I had a long break in between my beekeeping. And I don't claim to be an expert. And I do bees my way, and it seems to work. The colonies that I've removed, where the queen is present. Our queens are extremely wily. Very rarely, I notice, what's his name? 628 Dirt Rooster and Ed are always catching the bloody queen. And it's irritating me because the amount of swarms I've removed, I think I've only, let's say I've done 20. If I've done 20 removals, I'll only have seen two queens. So they're incredibly wily.
Yeah, I get lucky. I find them pretty much most of the time too. But when you say wild, you mean they just run around really fast, or they hide?
They hide. They disappear. Often they leave the site, and then I'll get them because they'll be hanging from a bush or hanging on the side of a tree. Then I know the queen's there, and I'll go and scoop them up or vacuum them up. But otherwise, we don't get to see the queens that often.
Can you tell me a little bit about the defensiveness behavior of the bees there? Because I seem to remember you telling me that, yes, they do. They are very defensive at some times of the year, but then other times of the year, you can work them in regular clothing with just a simple net or something like that. Did I hear that right? Or did I read that?
The spring into summer, they're incredibly aggressive. I mean, they sting me through gloves. They sting me through my bee suit. They will chase me. They'll follow me all the way back to my vehicle, even if it's 300-400 meters. and I have to sit there and surround myself in the veil of smoke and jump into my truck and turn the aircon on and hopefully make it cold enough that they will leave as soon as I open the door.
Wow.
So, yeah, they are incredibly aggressive in the spring and summer. But come autumn, late summer and autumn, they're very placid.
Oh, that's the exact opposite of here. That's the exact opposite. Any time from April to July, I'm usually wearing T-shirt and shorts, tank top, bare hands, you know, just a little mosquito net over my face, and maybe one out of 100 colonies will just have a kind of a defensive trait where I'd want to put my suit on. But come, you know, late July, August, September, which is our kind of late summer going into fall, forget about it. You have to have a full suit on. But I'm sure it's nothing like the kind of aggression that you guys have. But for here, we would call that pretty defensive.
But they go off properly. Just recently, close to where I live, close to Simonstown, actually, where that first varroa infestation was noted, is an area called Boulders Beach, which is quite famous because we have the African jackass penguin that nests on the beach there. And the conservationists built them lovely igloo-shaped, this is my theory, okay? 60 penguins were stung to death by a swarm of bees.
Okay.
There is some people that think somebody was human interference with a hive nearby or a swarm nearby. I don't think so. They would have to travel fairly far to get down to the beach where the penguins are. I'm talking hundreds of meters. They've made nesting boxes for these penguins, which are fiberglass igloos. They look really nice and really nicely accommodate the penguins. And my suspicion is that when the penguins finished nesting and took their chicks out, the bees moved in. And now it's breeding season again. The penguins went in there and the bees went on the rampage.
Yeah.
And stunned 60 penguins to death.
Hmm. So does South Africa import any bees from anywhere? I was just thinking about that. Do they bring in any, what would you call them, European regular honeybees from anywhere? Or any queens or anything like that?
Not that I'm aware of. I know in the States you guys can order a package of bees by 5 pounds or 10 pounds and it gets posted to you. We don't really have that here. The beekeepers that do sell swarms are guys who do removals. There's a beekeeper that lives 5 or 6 miles over the mountain from me. I understand he's got about 2,000 hives. He does pollination services, and he's regarded as one of the bigger in the Western Cape. I haven't spoken to him, but I've heard that he's doing a queen breeding program. Whether he'll sell the queens or use them for his own purposes, I don't know. But as far as importing bees are concerned, I don't think that it's practiced yet at all.
Yeah, here you can have a package of bees, basically a swarm in a screen box, ship it to your local post office, maybe to your door, I'm not sure. That's how I got my very first colony shipped to the post office down the road, just a little box. That was a while back. Now I just do removals here too. That's how I get all mine and just have fun with them. What do you think about, well, also in the paper that you sent me, it said that some beekeepers are starting to use miticides. I wasn't sure if that was in the north or what part of that area they were talking about, but what do you think will happen if people start treating, and why would they even do that if they're not having very high losses, or are they?
Well, after I spoke to you, I called a big wholesaler of beekeeping equipment, and he runs beekeeping courses, and he's very well known in South Africa. He's up in the north near the Zimbabwe border, closer to the Johannesburg Pretoria area. As you say, geographically challenged, so that's 1,500 kilometers north of me, where they have a different bee. We have the capensis and they have the scutellata. which is also more aggressive than our bee. I called him up and said to him, look, you know, what's the story with Varroa mites? And he sort of kept quiet for a couple of seconds and he says, no, we don't worry about it. So if anybody was selling treatments, it would be him. So again, up in the north, they're not worrying about it at all.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up because I was starting to think maybe you were also talking about Scutellata, but yeah, okay, so the Cape honeybee is different from Scutellata. And I think a lot of Americans would say, oh, well, the reason that they don't have any issues with Varroa mites is because it's this kind of bee and it has this kind of behavior and it's aggressive. But the fact remains that at one time there were no Varroa mites there at all, and then there were. So just because two species of bee, or subspecies, I guess, of honeybees, they've been able to deal with this. I don't know if you could forward the position that it's because they're a different kind. My thought is it's because they allowed selection to take place. I mean, how did that? Do you have any idea how that kind of decision came down? How did everyone kind of talk about it and say, hey, we're just not going to take the same steps that the United States and Europe and all these other places did? Do you know how that came about?
No, I'm not sure how that came about. But reading the research paper by the Department of Agriculture, as the product was, no treatments were available, and their recommendation was, let's wait and see, which could have backfired horribly on them. It could have wiped out the bee colonies right across the country.
Right.
But it hasn't. There's a couple of streets in this country, in Cape Town, that I can drive down and check all the fire hydrants. All our fire hydrants are underground in cast iron boxes, painted bright yellow, which will attract the bee as well. And a bee swarm can't resist a fire hydrant. I must have cut out over the last couple of years 50 swarms out of fire hydrants. And there's a couple of streets that for years beekeepers have known about. If you need a couple of swarms, go down that road and pick yourself up a couple. And that hasn't changed. I mean, that the old chap, Yanni Conradi, that gave me a lifetime crash course in beekeeping in 2 years, he's been doing it for the last 30 or 40 years. So surely if Varroa mites were infesting wild colonies, including the domestic quality, the farm colonies and wild ones, that would have been noticed.
Right.
Those swarms would have died out.
Yeah, that's I'm not exactly sure of the history here of what happened in the first few years after Varroa mites were discovered here. So I don't even want to say any years, but I know that the year they were discovered wasn't the year they got here. They had to get here sometime before that until people figured out what was going on. And a lot of people like to say Varroa mites wiped out all the wild colonies. It even said that in the paper that you sent me. And my thought is, why would anyone think that feral colonies in trees or buildings or in fire hydrants, why would they think that they would be any worse off than bees in some box where someone's, you know, messing with them occasionally or keeping them too close or putting the wrong frames in the wrong box, smashing queens? Why would they think for a second that somehow the feral colonies were worse off, where no one was taking their honey, they're living in a nice insulated area? I mean, where does that assertion even come from? When there were no treatments available. So
exactly.
So the trees weren't being treated, you know, the tree colonies, and also the bees in people's boxes weren't being treated. So it makes no sense to me that feral, anytime someone says all the feral colonies were wiped out.
No, not that I know of here. And speaking to the older beekeepers, they know where to go and get colonies. They know where to go put up their catch boxes, and they've done it for 20, 30, 40 years in the same sites.
Cool.
So those feeder, let's call them feeder swarms, they were putting off the smaller swarms that the guys were going and catching. they would have died out.
You said feeder swarms. What does that mean? What do you mean?
Well, let's just say the main swarm, the mother, let's call it, for want of a better word, a mother swarm that's putting out the swarms every year that the beekeepers know where to go and catch them or where to place their catch boxes. There would have been years where there were no swarms put off by because the swarms would have died out, if that logic is correct, that it wiped out all the wild swarms.
Oh, okay, yeah. I think the reason I was confused because when you refer to swarms over here, or at least with me, whenever I refer to a swarm, I'm always talking about a cluster of bees hanging on a branch or something. And then over there, I guess you guys call a swarm what I would just call a colony, right? It's just,
or do you? Yeah, it's just a different terminology.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. So,
and I imagine if I go and I speak to some beekeepers in another area, they'll call them colonies and I'll call them swarms.
Yeah. Okay. So that clears that up. So you just use swarms a little bit more, a little bit more than I do. Oh, now the sun's coming up, burning my eyes.
There we go.
It's been gloomy all day. I said, I'll sit out here in the shade and talk to him.
What's the temperature there now?
What is the temperature here? It's pretty nice right now. Let me see what it is. I can find that out. It is 68 Fahrenheit. I'm not sure what that translates to in Celsius. 68 degrees, so it's just really comfortable.
So it's probably about 16, 17 Celsius.
Yeah, we're going into fall here, and things are looking really good. I mean, the bees are looking great. So do you ever have conversations with other American beekeepers at all, or do you guys just, or you know, on TikTok or Facebook or anything, any extended conversations to get an idea of what it's even like over here?
No, I'm an American bee conversation virgin. You're the first one.
Okay.
So, looking at YouTube again, and I see the amount of swarms that the guys remove, or colonies that the guys remove. Your 628 dirt rooster and the chaps. There's a hell of a lot of wild colonies there.
Oh my goodness! Yeah.
Yeah. So. No one's treating those, just to go back to the Varroa mites, nobody is treating those wild colonies for Varroa mites.
Right. And I hope Randy from 628 Dirt Rooster, if he watches this, sometimes he watches a couple of my videos and comments, is always, I'm always like so happy when he comes over. But those guys like 628 Dirt Rooster, JP the Bee Man, who I watch all the time.
Yeah, I watch him as well, yeah.
So many other people, but they actually, from what they said, I've seen them say it a few times, they don't treat their bees. They remove a lot of feral colonies. They remove swarms. You know, they do swarm calls just like I do.
Yeah.
And those guys don't treat their bees, and really, they don't want to come out and be like the treatment free guy like I do. But it seems like they would be great spokespeople for kind of the right thing to do with bees. If we want to move past all these treatments over here and kind of have what you guys have, I think the whole beekeeping community here is just so scared of that initial calling of susceptible bees.
Yeah. Tell me, in the winter, how do you, I mean, you mentioned you get a little bit of snow there. How do you protect your hives?
Well, in my area, man, I just picked the wrong day to come out here. There's a bird chirping, right?
It sounds all rural and rustic and natural, so that's pretty good.
I hope it doesn't come through too bad on the recording. But over here in wintertime, my area gets a good amount of snow some years. We had almost three and a half feet last winter. The low temperature wasn't really that low. I think we only got to maybe 10 degrees Fahrenheit at the lowest this past year. Two years ago, we got down to negative 22 degrees Fahrenheit for 3 weeks. It was actually my best year overwintering bees was during the coldest temperature. Yeah. And then last year was fine with me. I had a lot of colony losses, but that's what I like. I want to deselect my bees that just can't cut it. So in preparation for winter here, I can overwinter a 5-frame nuke. I have the best success with anything 10 frames or less. You know, 10 frame, 8 frame box, 5 frame nuke. I just like them to be really heavy. And then I just insulate the lid with some 2-inch rigid insulation foam and put a little guard on to keep the mice out. And that's all I do. I don't do anything besides that.
You're not packing polystyrene around the hive or straw bales or anything?
No, nothing like that. I did that a couple times in my first years of keeping bees, and they always seemed to, the ones I put the most effort into insulating and just doing everything, those would die. And the ones that I kind of left alone because I was pretty sure they were going to die would live. So each year I just knocked off a little bit more of what I do to where now it's just bare bones. Okay. Insulate the lid.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah, insulate the lid, put a mouse guard on, and they have to be heavy. If you go to tip up the back and lift it up and it just flies right up, then they're going to be pretty much done by November. Unless you can feed heavily and try to put some weight on them. But I have mixed results trying to put a ton of weight on bees with syrup sometimes. So, that's pretty much what we have to do here.
We're very fortunate here. The last 2 or 3 years that I've been watching through winter, overwintering my bees, is the bird dumping on your head?
Hold on, I gotta throw a rock at this. I don't know where it is, but I know it's right up here in this tree.
Get that.
Yeah, I missed Bosmer.
It's gonna come back and dump on your head now, watch.
Wish my rooster would chase it away. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Lost myself. Oh, through winter here, over the last 3 years watching, we went through a very severe drought where Cape Town would have been the first city to run out of water in the world. We go for all sorts of records in this country, highest murder rate, highest rape rate, and they were going for the first city in the world to run out of water through bad management, basically, and a very severe drought. Because of the water restrictions, a lot of my forage for my bees is in residential gardens. But when the drought broke, the last 3 years, my bees are bringing in pollen every day, and they're flying in nectar heavy, man. You can see them wobbling all over the place. So they're getting food right through the year.
Yeah, I wonder where they're finding it. There, do you have streams or rivers or anything or lakes around?
Yeah, there's no lakes. We're on the ocean. About 2 miles from the ocean. Yeah. There's some wetlands down below us. There's sort of swampy area. It's in the residential gardens where they're finding our fauna is what's endemic to the area. We get a lot of aloe plants.
Oh, wow.
They come on in flower in the late winter. And it's very easy to spot where if there's aloes flowering in the area because the pollen comes in red.
Yeah, it has the red flowers on it, right? And it looks like a pretty nectar-giving flower. You know, it's tubular.
The bees go nuts over them. You go out there and it's sort of 15 degrees Celsius, and you've just had 5 or 6 days of good rain. And you see the girls coming home with those nectar sacks full, those pollen sacks full. And it's just wonderful to watch. So we're very fortunate. I know the guys who do pollination services, they feed through the winter.
Okay.
Most of them do, yeah.
All right. Well, man, this is just really interesting. I mean, I'm sure I'll have some questions about this, a lot of comments, and it would be great if you like doing this, come back on and thanks for coming on here. Is there anything you want to know about things over here as we're closing?
Your average production, you guys work in pounds, we work in kilos. Per hive, per year. What are you guys getting over there?
Oh, I wouldn't be able to speak for an average, for the average beekeeper. I mean, it's a...
No, for yourself.
Yeah. Oh, for myself, I probably couldn't tell you that either, because I really keep bees mostly as kind of my fun thing to do. When I go around taking honey, I might take a couple frames from one, a couple from another, and I'll do that several times throughout the year. I don't really do kind of the harvest that a sideline or a commercial beekeeper might do, especially for my area. My area right here in this town is terrible for beekeeping. It's all farmland. So I really wouldn't even know what kind of number to throw at you. I harvested maybe a few buckets of honey, not even that much this year or last year.
We'll get in this area, we can on a good year when there's lots of our what we call fynbos, which is the endemic flora that's growing on the mountain behind me, and then all the residential gardens, and people are quite keen gardeners in this area. The other big bonus we have here is the Brazilian pepper tree, which is alien, and they keep encouraging people to cut them down. But man, that stuff gives off nectar and pollen like this. It's the best nectar producer in this area.
Yeah, we have that in the southern part of the United States. I hear about it a lot in, you know, Louisiana, Florida, Texas, those kind of places. I hear about the Brazilian pepper, just not up here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so on a strong colony, we can get to twice. I can take honey out twice in the season, and I'll have two boxes of the strong colony. So I'm getting, 10 kilograms per box? So that's 20, that's 40 kilos from a colony per year. That's, 70 pounds.
Okay. Yeah, I was just thinking as you were talking, I had to time travel in my mind a little bit back to when I only kept, you know, two or three colonies at a time in the city when I didn't live here, and which is totally different. It's not far from here, but it's a totally different forage and flow and everything. And when I only kept two or three colonies, three or four, I could normally get probably two deep 10 frame boxes off of each one. It was very easy to keep track then, and I kind of did it the normal beekeeper way. I never had to feed in the city ever. I had to take honey off of those bees, or I was going to take them in the winter, you know, four deeps high, which I didn't want to do.
Yeah,
those were the good old days of living in the city with just a couple beehives. So whatever that weight is, that's the difference between, that's what a difference 20 miles can make here, you know, two 10 frame deeps or just a couple frames off of each one out here in the country.
That's one question that you just mentioned, the deeps. I see the Americans mostly use deeps. Is that correct for honey?
No, I think, you know, just by what I see and most people I talk to, a lot of people use what we call mediums over here for the honey supers. Yeah. I don't see too many people wanting to lift, you know, 10 frame deeps. Some do. I'm sure some do. But even me, I use mediums.
It's a standard here is using mediums. My spinner is set up for mediums. I can't fit deeps into it. So everybody around here, in this country uses the deeps.
Oh, they use the deeps for...
The mediums. Oh, okay.
And not you use mediums for, what about on your lower boxes, say your brood boxes?
My brood boxes are deep.
Okay. Yeah, so that's similar to what I do.
What I've, just a quick note, I know you might want to end off, is I've taken to, from my nuke, if I catch a small swarm, I do a removal, I keep it in a nuke, I transfer it into a brood, and then I put a medium on top of it. So the queen moves up and lays in both the medium and the deep brood. And my way of splitting is to take that medium off and put it onto a brood box.
Okay. Yeah, I've done that too.
It works really well. And if I take the queen with me, the remaining bees in the deep will produce their own queen.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's worked well for me.
Awesome. Yeah, this was so. Yeah, I just want to say thanks again. This was great. It's probably getting late over there, but thanks for being my guest. Oh, and where can if any of my listeners or viewers want to check you out, do you have a YouTube channel yourself?
No, I don't have. In fact, I've been toying with the idea. I don't have a YouTube channel. My daughter runs the. She's got interested in bees in the last year or so. She helps me out. She's still learning. She's going to be doing all the honey sales to make her pocket money as a student. She's just got the TikTok account.
All right. So I will get your TikTok link in wherever I put this video or recording. I'll put your TikTok link in there just so they can check it out if they have any questions for you. I mean, if that's cool with you.
That's 100% with me. I've got time on my hands and I love talking about bees. In fact, my mates have said to me that I can talk about anything when we go for a barbecue except bees. So,
yeah. It is rough trying to not change the subject of every conversation to bees. I do that at work all the time. Yeah, they get sick of it. But yeah, I know
it's addictive. Yeah.
All right, Chris. Take care.
Thanks very much for having me on. It's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed chatting to you, and we'll chat again soon.
All right. Stay in touch. Take care.
All right, mate.